Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are listening that you have had a good weekend, and thank you so much for making us a part of the start to your week. Obviously, it was a very significant weekend in the bubble in basketball. We talked about it on Saturday, the Nuggets extending their series and the Celtics clinching their series. So now we've got the matchup in the Eastern Conference Finals between the Heat and the Celtics. Well, the Lakers took care of business again on Saturday, so they are now in the Western Conference. So three of the four participants in the conference finals are decided. Now, a lot of folks thought that, you know, at the end of last week, the Clippers would be there as well. But the Nuggets, as we talked about Friday night, and then again yesterday, coming back, playing great defense, led by Nikola Jokic, they now have extended this series with the Clippers to seven games. And I have thought for a while that the Clippers were the favorite in the Western Conference, but now, not only is it, you know, in question whether they're going to get there to the conference finals, because, you know, I think the Clippers are the better team, but it's hard to argue that the Nuggets don't have the momentum. I feel the Nuggets certainly have the momentum going into Game 7. Now also, with whoever wins the series, you're going to have them facing the Lakers, who are going to be a lot more fresh and ready to go. So certainly more excitement than many had anticipated, but also the good thing about that is that it makes for intriguing basketball, which we're getting now on a nightly basis, obviously, in the bubble. Before we continue, we do want to remind you of our title sponsor, Built Bar. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you can get the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, a wide assortment of flavors. But if you enter the code LOCKEDONNBA, you'll get $10 off your next order. I can tell you this, I don't think it'll be your last one. But if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, put in the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, you'll get $10 off your next order. With that being said, one of the teams that is in the conference final, and if you want to say the Cinderella of the bubble so far and the NBA playoffs, are the Miami Heat. And I am very pleased to welcome to the show Locked On Heat Podcast Network host David Ramil. David, I know that you've been busy. I know you've got a lot on your plate, obviously, this week. But thank you Thank you so much for taking time to join us. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. It's been a heck of a great playoff run for Miami, and I'm happy to talk about the team with anybody interested in listening.
And David, you know, congratulations to you. Obviously, you know, the last time the Grizzlies really saw the Heat was the scrimmage before the bubble started. And in my opinion, that's when the Grizzlies played the best, with that first half against the Heat. You know, we felt that, you know, the Grizzlies were in sync, ready to go. And of course, it didn't work out for the Grizzlies, but it certainly has for the Heat. But me and you were talking before I started the podcast, the one thing that has stood out about the Heat that you haven't seen so much in the bubble, but you did see stand out Friday of last week with the Celtics closing out their series and the Nuggets extending their series, was defense. And that's been the Heat's calling card. Where has this defense come from, and do you think it's here to stay in the Heat making a pursuit of the finals?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think, well, look, I mean, the Indiana matchup was probably a favorable one for Miami in that they were undermanned. They were missing key players like Domantas Sabonis and even their bench scorer, Jeremy Lamb. So that certainly favored Miami. But they were able to target their players and limit what they could do offensively. They did such a great job of limiting T.J. Warren in particular. So that's absolutely been a focal point for them. And obviously in Milwaukee, I think a lot of the reason why they acquired Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala from the Memphis Grizzlies was because they wanted to have those kind of long wing defenders that could challenge Adetokounmpo as he gets to the rim and build the wall that we saw so effectively in the five-game series. So I think they have the personnel. They have enough versatility defensively. It all starts with Bam Adebayo, but of course you have a lot of other really great perimeter defenders like Butler, Crowder, etc. So Miami's defense, to me, seems like it's much more legitimate. There were concerns about that prior to the hiatus, but it seems like they've figured it out now, and I think there's much more of a laser-like focus on tuning up their defense and finding ways to exploit weaknesses in other teams.
And that's the thing about it, is that, you know, that's why I wanted the opportunity to speak with you, because over the past year, you know, there have been several things about the Heat that have been connected with the Grizzlies, and we'll get into a few of those here in just a few minutes. But I do want to start with Andre Iguodala and, you know, Jay Crowder. Of course, Grizzlies fans, myself and others, you know, we know what it's like to see Jay Crowder play. We don't necessarily with Andre Iguodala, but we'll stay away from that. But obviously, you know, that was a big, you know, trade, a big trade for both teams. Jay Crowder became a fan favorite, really loved the way that he embraced the young core here and played a big role, you know, as we were succeeding and exceeding expectations here in Memphis. However, he has taken a significant step forward with his play and especially his outside shooting in Miami. What do you think has clicked for him basically to be playing the best basketball of his career?
I can't honestly tell you that there was anything in particular. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop when it comes to Crowder. But I think he's been long on Miami's radar in the sense that he has ties to South Florida because his family's from here. And he has the kind of temperament as far as embracing the work ethic and everything else that comes with being a part of the Miami Heat culture. And I think that's he's just fit very comfortably here. Now, there's also ties to Marquette University, obviously, with Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler, who both attended there. So that's also helped. He spoke recently on a Zoom press conference about how much he's felt like he's been here for much longer than he actually has. That even Eric Spoelstra says that while we've only had him for a couple of months, it actually feels like he's been here for years. So there's a certain level of familiarity that has just taken place very, very quickly. So I think that's a big part of it. Now, you also have other options offensively where you're not looking just to have Crowder get going. You have guys that are capable of driving to the rim, creating some space there, and he's turned into an incredible catch and shooter. And he's just been amazing at being able to knock down those long distance shots. Maybe it starts off with the kind of quality passing that you get from their bigs too, because Bam Adebayo is a heck of a great passer. There's a familiarity even with Kelly Olynyk, who played together with Crowder on the Boston Celtics. So there's a lot of different factors there. And he seemed to embrace everything about being part of Miami. And it's really shown on the court as well as off the court.
And that's the thing about it with Jay Crowder is that, you know, you would think if you looked over his career, one thing that stands out for a guy that, you know, at times many valued, I mean, I think he was called one of the best contracts in the league at one point. He may not have reached the level of individual production throughout his career that many had for him. And you would think, you may think negative thoughts if you saw how many teams he's played for, but he always is a featured player in a role. He always gets rave reviews as a teammate, and he's always on playoff teams. It just seems like the mentality and the attitude of Jay Crowder is just, it's awesome. It just, and that's what I got from him when he was in Memphis. It is what you want your young pros to be, and he's just welcome into any environment that he's involved with.
That's a great point, and I think Spoelstra also spoke about how comfortable he's been as a vocal leader in the locker room, reaching out to guys like Duncan Robinson and Tyler Heroes and other young players, even Kendrick Nunn, people that who have not experienced any kind of playoff-like atmosphere. And for Crowder, who has obviously, as you pointed out, been in so many long playoff runs, either with the Celtics or the Jazz, I think, you know, we start to see that he's just much more familiar with what it takes. And even inside the confines of the bubble, as difficult as that pressure has been, he just seems to be very comfortable and thriving there. And a lot of that mentality is kind of passed around to those younger players that need so much of that experience. They need to hear from the more vocal veterans that it's going to be okay and what to do and how to prepare. And Crowder has always been such a great professional. And I think it just feels like it's a great fit here in Miami.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get David's perspective on a new Grizzly that's in town. He's not played for us yet. We're going to get David's perspective on Justice Winslow. We'll be right back with you here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Talking about erectile dysfunction is never easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with phrases such as, I had a long day at work, or sorry, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/XXX and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to Roman.com/LockedOnNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. So, David, obviously when that trade went down in February, we're talking about Solomon Hill, Andre Iguodala, Jay Crowder, for Deion Waiters, James Johnson, and Justice Winslow. Now, James Johnson was eventually sent to Minnesota. Deion Waiters was, you know, he had had his issues with Miami, waived by the Grizzlies. But, you know, Justice Winslow right now, unfortunately, so far, we were all really excited to see what he could do in the bubble. Got injured, didn't work out. So Justice Winslow is an idea instead of a reality at this point. But the hope is that he can fit in a lot of needed areas for the Grizzlies. When Justice Winslow is at his best, what do you feel the Grizzlies will get, and how will he add value to them as they try to get closer to contention?
Well, unfortunately, I think a lot of that same premise that he's an idea rather than a reality is what kind of defined his stint in Miami, too. There was always the promise of Justice Winslow. The fact that he dropped so much in the lottery, he was expected at one point to be a top five pick, and then he slid to 10th. And that was a different version of the Miami Heat team where they had veterans like Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh and Goran Dragic. And Winslow was just going to kind of slide in there and be more of a, you know, somebody who was expected to contribute defensively, maybe knock down some shots from the perimeter, maybe make plays for others. But there was no clearly defined role for him. And then that changed the following season when Dwayne leaves to Chicago. And now all of a sudden you have Winslow and Josh Richardson, who was drafted in that same rookie class, you know, kind of expected to take on a much bigger role. And that never worked out because Winslow gets hurt. And so then you have a third version of this team with Winslow on it, where he's now, again, mostly a backup trying to figure out how to play alongside guys like Waiters and Goran Dragic and others. And then, of course, Dwayne comes back a season later. So the point here is that we don't know exactly what version of Justice Winslow to expect because he's been through so many different iterations in Miami, and that's not his fault. The reality is that we never really put a team that could manifest his talents to their full capacity. So I would say that from Winslow, you're going to get a strong defender, and that's without a doubt. Like, his defensive capabilities are so great in that he's very versatile. He's quick-footed, quick hands. He can guard 1 through 5, and he has done so on occasion. So you're going to get a great perimeter defender and a guy willing to mix it up. He can be physical on occasion, particularly when it comes to guarding bigger players. Now, as far as his offense is concerned, that's much more hard to define because we're not quite sure if he's ever going to have that. If he's ever going to have the kind of range that we've only seen on occasion. And then there's also the moments where he's a great playmaker. That passing was on display during his first few games here this season. And then he got hurt, never quite rounded into form. But that's probably where his best role is as a point guard. And of course, you've got the rookie of the year there holding that position down. So I'm not sure what his best fit is. He's a playmaking big, and that he's 6'5", 6'6". 6'6", more or less, and he can defend at a high level, make plays for others. His offense is still very much a work in progress, so there's potential there. I think I'm not sure if this team is going to be able to maximize that or not, but that's the hope, I guess, for Grizzlies fans.
And that's the thing about it. The reason why we're all really hoping that, you know, he gets on the court is because the Grizzlies front office, though they've only really been at it for a little over a year, they've nailed almost every single opportunity where they've identified a player, went after him and got him, and then came into our coaching staff with Taylor Jenkins, and we've been able to develop it. But a little bit more on his offense, I agree with you. One of the big things about it is the Grizzlies on their wings and in their backcourt, they need size, and then they need that type of big athletic body that can stay with players. Yeah, Kyle Anderson is that to an extent, but of course he doesn't have the athleticism Winslow does. But if you look at Winslow's healthy season, the 2018-2019 season, over a sample size of 220 events, he made nearly 40% of his catch and shoot opportunities from three. He, like you said, he's shown the capability, but it also seems as if you're hinting at the fact that he's kind of inconsistent. He never was really a consistent to the point of being reliable 3-point shooter, which the Grizzlies would love for him to be.
That's absolutely the case. You saw that great season from him, and you're thinking, well, this is absolutely a platform where he's going to continue to build off of that, and then he kind of take a step down the following season. So you're never quite sure. Look, his mid-range game is still very much a work in progress. Like, even on his perimeter shot, you'll see him on occasion take some great shots where his rhythm is there. It looks fluid. It looks like a great shot. And then the next time he takes it, it's an absolute brick where there's no consistent form whatsoever. And so I'm not sure if his shot is altogether broken, but it's just gone through a number of changes over the course of his short career. And so the hope is that even as he kind of navigates his way through injury, is able to get a much more consistent jump shot so he can be a legitimate perimeter threat, and then kind of work that into his mid-range game, because he does have a little bit of a floater. He does have some nice touch around the basket. He's not explosive. Now, you say he's athletic, more athletic than Kyle, but at the same time, he's not a great leaper, so you don't expect any kind of huge dunks or anything like that. He's much more of a guy who's kind of the old man game, where he's a little bit more polished around the basket and he can make plays there. But I think the next step for him is pretty much as a playmaker. He's shown some really deft passing ability, which a lot of people did not expect coming out of Duke. And I think that's really where his best talent lies offensively.
And when it's playmaking ability, you know, the hope with the Grizzlies is that with not a lot of individual shooting talent, if they could get, you know, Morant's athletic ability off the ball, if they could show more opportunities to perhaps get Dylan Brooks and De'Aaron Jackson Jr. open for shots, that would be another wrinkle to an offense that needs depth to make up for the fact that we just don't have the individual talent yet that we would like to one day. Was it a lot of good off the ball movement that you saw that made Justice Winslow's passing, you know, at lead at times, or was it decision making? Has Winslow shown good decision making on his passes, or was it more of the scheme that Spoelstra and the coaching staff came up with?
No, I think it was more of the decision making ability. He has a pretty tight handle, all things considered, and he can be great in transition play. He knows how to find the right cutters and guys open on their spots from along the perimeter. So I think that's the hope there, is that he's able to drive and penetrate and then kick it out to guys that are wide open from the perimeter, or he can find cutters as they're getting to the basket. So he did show some ability to find the open players and hit them in the right spots. So that's absolutely a talent of his.
And the other thing that I'll ask about Winslow is that, you know, we talked about it with Jay Crowder, you know, the attitude off the court. As soon as, you know, coming from Miami, Miami is a destination. Memphis is not. That's a big difference between the two places. But Winslow immediately embraced Memphis. And something that I noticed about him, the bubble, he had the hip displacement injury, but yet he was there. He stayed. He was on crutches instead of leaving in training. He was there to support his teammates. And there were multiple instances where multiple players from different teams, not just the Heat, they came and checked up on him. Winslow seems to have a very magnetic type personality, a very positive influence off the court. Can you speak to that? He seems to be a very good teammate and a great presence for a building culture like Memphis.
I think that's fair. I think he's certainly amiable. He's great with media. I think he's shown a lot of polish as far as being able to connect, and he has off the court interests that make him a very interesting personality. And I think that he is, at one point, I actually thought that he might be Miami's best recruiter as far as being able to draw other talents here, because I thought he was much more of a long-term piece to Miami's rotations. Of course, it didn't quite work out that way, but he does seem to have a lot of connections, you know, no doubt through Duke University and everything else. But, you know, I think he's been a great teammate here in Miami. Everybody seemed to like him. I think there were some concerns about his attitude, in that he viewed himself as a much bigger piece of this rotation than the Heat front office did. And then, of course, then he kind of balked at being rushed back onto the court with the whole back injury. And so I think that was some of the tension there between him and the front office, is that they viewed his injury as much more negligible, and they thought he could get out there and play a lot sooner. He didn't want to take any chances with that back injury. In fact, there was a misdiagnosis. It was very dramatic there during his short time here this last season. And so there were some concerns that maybe he wasn't the right fit as far as the attitude is concerned. But, you know, amongst other teammates, he's absolutely been great. He's great meshing with veterans. He's great learning from them. He's great reaching out to younger guys. Now, he's in his fifth season, so he's kind of a veteran. And although he's still pretty young, I think he can help be a much more stabilizing force in that roster. So that's a good thing. And, you know, I think a lot of that might have been overblown somewhat. Miami had of the perspective that they had to win now this season, and they couldn't tolerate anybody deviating from that. I think a lot of the stuff with Deion Waiters was overblown. And I think we saw that with Justice as well, is that they probably could have been a lot more tolerant of his attitude and issues and things of that sort. And said they just jettisoned him because they wanted somebody to be much more experienced and win now. And that's what they saw in Iguodala and Crowder.
And the thing that I'll say is this, is that you were talking about win now, and justice may have been a piece that needed to go into a setting to where that pressure wasn't there for him to develop. Hopefully it will. The trade certainly worked out for Miami, and hopefully next year and beyond, it'll work out for Memphis. We're going to take our last break and then come back with David. Something I've been wanting to talk with him for a long time about, that's the excellent developmental culture that is in Miami. We'll be right back with you. It's very likely that all of us would love to incorporate healthy habits to our daily routine. Let's just be honest, it's hard to do at times. Well, a way that I might be able to suggest you could do that and enjoy a tasty snack during the day is Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. A lot of times you have to sacrifice taste to get health or health to get taste with your protein bar options, but not with Built Bar. And the great thing about it is that it's a very versatile snack. You could have it in the morning for breakfast, you can have it before or after a workout, or perhaps in the afternoon when you're listening to your favorite Locked On Podcast Network show. And there's a wide assortment of options to choose from when it comes to Built Bar. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you can find many different flavors to choose from. I personally like the peanut butter myself, but whatever flavor you choose, it's going to be very tasty. If you go to BuiltBar.com right now and you enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, you'll get $10 off your next order. But the good thing is, the great thing is, I feel confident in saying it's not going to be your last. When you get an order of Built Bar as a part of your daily routine, you're going to want to keep it. But if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and put in the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your next order at Built Bar. All right, David, so if someone would have sat down with you and at the beginning of the season told you that when you look at Kendrick Nunn and when you look at Duncan Robinson, you would be looking at the Rookie of the Year runner-up and a guy who right now could be considered one of the top five shooters in the NBA. If somebody would have set you down a year ago and told you that, what would your reaction have been?
I would have thought they were crazy. There was no chance I saw any of them taking the leap they had. And that's despite my understanding of Heat culture and their ability to develop players and everything else. I think during summer league play, we saw some flashes from Kendrick Nunn, and my former co-host and I were looking at his game and said, well, it's nice. It's got some, you know, offensive polish to it, but he's not going to be on the roster once the team is finalized in September. And clearly that was not the case. He winds up being inserted as a starter and an immediate contributor. And as far as Duncan is concerned, we never saw that happening. There's always been an understanding that he was a great shooter, but that was pretty much it. And they have just figured out a way to utilize his skill set and unlock everything else that the team does well.
And that's the thing about it. That's why I really wanted to talk with you about it, because, you know, here in Memphis, you know, I'm not sure how closely you have followed, but one thing that I am so excited about is we finally have a coach who at different levels can sit here and develop players. We've got players like Anthony Melton turning into a valuable reserve, all the way up to Brandon Clark, you know, arguably being, you know, the runner up in, you know, the Rookie of the Year race. We won't get into that debate. But just looking at it, I mean, from the different levels now, you've got Bam, who's going to become an all-star, Nunn and Robinson, who have turned into, you know, not only valuable role players, but elite role players, and Tyler Hero now playing as if he's a top five rookie talent out of this class. What is it specifically about Spoelstra and the way that he does things in Miami that is just so, that allows for so much development on so many different levels from the top to bottom of the roster?
Well, they do a great job of scouting, and I have to say that's the case. For a team like Miami, despite the fact that they generally devalue draft picks, they use them mostly as fodder to acquire a more established veteran, or, you know, they're often built through free agency because they are a destination team, as you pointed out earlier. So I think that's they recognize that when they have so few picks, they better hit on those. So they do a really good job of scouting, and a big part of that is finding players who are more committed to do work than you might think otherwise. And so that's a huge thing with Duncan, is that he has, if you know anything about his story, he obviously wasn't a great high school player, had to go through the Division III school and then kind of work his way up so he could become an occasional player at the University of Michigan. But he's transformed himself into this kind of player where he continues to work and work hard. And so that immediately stood out to them, as they recognized, well, he's got one great skill. We can work on everything else because he has that kind of established work ethic. And so I think that's not just Spoelstra. It's the scouting department. It's every coach on that team. A lot of the guys that are on that the assistant coaching staff were former Heat players. So now there's a familiarity. There's Malik Allen, Anthony Carter, Chris Quinn. All those guys were former Miami Heat players. So they understand what it's like to play for Eric Spoelstra or to play for Pat Riley. And then that's another thing, too, is that there is a stability in that front office where you've got, since Pat Riley joined the team in 1995, there have been people in that front office that have been there since that time period. It's not just Riley who's continued to be a major impact on the team building aspect, but Spoelstra, who worked his way up as a video coordinator, et cetera. So there's an established stability, culture, understanding of how to do things. And they find a way to, again, find your key talents and build a team around them that maximizes what everybody can do. And they all seem to fit so well. It's just, it's worked so well. And not even just in Miami, but even prior to that, Pat Riley was known for finding guys that were in the old CBA, the Continental Basketball Association, and getting them to kind of develop and shine at the NBA level. So I think that's just always been a big part of what he likes to do, is take these projects and turn them into valuable key rotation players.
And that's the thing that I'll say, is that, you know, one thing that I've read a few places, seen hinted at when it comes to Duncan Robinson specifically. I talk about him mostly because he has the skill set that the Grizzlies would love to find to add to their core here. But, you know, comparing Jaren Jackson Jr. to Duncan Robinson, obviously the pedigrees are different. But with Duncan Robinson, I've heard the Heat really focused on what he did well instead of trying to coach it up what he struggled with. Here in Memphis, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr., we would love for him, to be more physical, rebound more, whatever it may be. But he also is a truly unique talent for his size from the outside. But just your thoughts on that. It really seems with Duncan Robinson that, you know, the Heat focused on what he did well. They've done the same thing with Nunn, and they really embraced that, and they molded his role on the team to make sure that that's featured. That plays a big part in it as well, correct?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think, look, Robinson obviously known for his shooting, but they had the plays in place, the kind of way that he comes off of multiple screens in place from Wayne Ellington, who was a sharpshooter who took another career leap in Miami. And even prior to that, when Ray Allen was with a team during the Big Three era. So they already knew how to coach shooters to get them the kind of space necessary so they could have the gravity on defenders, where they drew multiple defenders, and that kind of freed things up for other players too. So, and with Nunn, he just has a knack for being able to put the ball down, get to the hoop. He's not great, I think, as a shooter. There's still an opportunity for him to become an even better shooter. But at the same time, they needed another playmaker in that starting rotation, even with a guy like Jimmy Butler or Bam Adebayo, both of whom are great offensive players and playmakers for others. They needed somebody else who could put the ball down and occasionally go out and create his own shot, because Duncan isn't going to do that. He gets open from the perimeter, but he's not going to create off the dribble. That's just not who he is just yet. For Nunn, it's about, that's his special ability, and that's why he's out on the floor. At least that's what he was prior to inserting Goran Dragic in the starting lineup during the playoffs. So they have a pretty good way of communicating with players too, and I think that's a big part of what makes Spoelstra such a great coach. And you probably have that from Taylor Jenkins as well, is that I think he's a great communicator, a guy who can kind of relate and has the experience as a head coach, you know, having coached big egos and big players and Hall of Fame type talents, and been able to kind of communicate and relate to them so that he can reach out to a younger player like Robinson or Nunn and say, look, I have your best interest at heart. We want you to thrive. And if you trust me, it's going to work out for you in the long run. It's going to take some time, but if you do the work, and everybody in Miami has historically done the work, you're going to get paid, you're going to get compensated, you're going to get recognized, and you're going to find the ultimate goal of winning becoming available to you.
And here again with David Ramil, host of the Locked On Heat podcast, as we have just a few more questions with him. One other thing before, and I also want to get your perspective on Tyler Hero, but before we do that, Jimmy Butler, you know, we had talked about it. I had mentioned about it when the Grizzlies had their end of the year media sessions, is that it's not just knowing that our young players, as young as they are, not just knowing that they need to do the work, but they value that work and they enjoy that work. But I think that Jimmy Butler, what a lot of people, I know that there's been some negative about stuff about him throughout his career in the press, but he also is a very hard worker, someone who is committed to his craft. He got there for that reason and loves the work that goes into it. It seems like that also has been a benefit. Certainly, you know, when your star player sets that precedent, you know, it shows the value to the rest of the team. Is that the type of impact that Butler has had since day one when he arrived in Miami?
Without a doubt. He gravitated towards Miami's long established devotion to work and vice versa. He's been the perfect player in his short stint here. It, again, just like Crowder, with a guy like Butler, who's only been here a year, it seems like he's been here a lot longer. He's helped define so much of what this team does and become an extension of Riley and Spoelstra and just people who are dedicated workers and obsessed almost to the level of work and getting improvement. And you look at Butler's career arc where, you know, he was a low draft pick and then part of this very talented Bulls team, and he kind of had to claw his way to get playing time and prove himself to Tom Thibodeau when he was the head coach there, et cetera. And it's just made so much sense for him to just always put a premium on continuing to do the work and establishing that that level to yourself. And I think he's just fit in so perfectly here. And he's been a great locker room presence in that he's been able to bond with the younger players. He's bonded with the veterans, an unlikely friendship between him and Goran Dragic. And culturally, you might think they have nothing in common. And yet here they are drinking beers together in the Orlando bubble. And that's been great to watch, to see that kind of appreciation, that mutual appreciation for each other there. He's just, it's been really phenomenal. And he's been such a positive presence. I've long thought that that kind of work ethic would make a great fit in Miami, and it's proven to be correct.
The last player who really has, you know, start in the bubble towards the end of the season, you know, someone that a lot of Grizzlies players follow since we're in SEC country, and also because he has a skill set that the Grizzlies would love to have to find in a player one day, is that of Tyler Hero. Now, there's no doubt Hero is a talent, and he's had a good rookie season, but it seems like he's really stepped up, and there seems to be a confidence about him that goes along with his very relevant and significant skill set. With his confidence, what else about his game have you seen develop the most that truly has allowed for him to take the next step to have an outlook to where he could become one of the perimeter shooters in the game?
Well, I know I sound like a broken record here, but the work ethic really has been the most surprising aspect. We've started to hear a lot about Hero during the whole draft process, where they kind of put him through a shooting drill, and he wound up becoming, I think he wound up getting the highest score in that shooting drill. It's one that the team has worked on for decades now. And not even Ray Allen, as great a Hall of Fame shooter as he was, had the same score as Tyler Hero. So obviously Hero has proven to be an incredible shooter, but it's just his dedication, his work ethic. He is not your typical 19, 20-year-old, and he's just shown a whole other level to him. The confidence, as you pointed out, clearly off the charts. The ability and the willingness to take those shots at the end of the games, even in the Orlando bubble and during a playoff setting, it's like you don't usually find the ball in a 20-year-old's hands, and he's not just willing to create those shot opportunities. He's willing to take them. He's been so good at it, and his playmaking ability, I think, is the next step for him, because obviously a great shooter, great handle, can create off the bounce, but he can make plays for others now in a way that he didn't earlier in the season, and I think that's the next step for him. Defensively, he's put in some work, but there's still another level for him. Spoelstra and Hero both have admitted that his defense isn't where it should be just yet, but that's the next level for him to achieve. But again, you have all the right pieces, and that's what has made Miami's playoff run such a successful one. So you have guys that are hard-nosed defenders. You have perimeter shooters. It's okay to be limited in your skill set so long as you bring out the most of that and it fits well with everybody else on the floor.
And David, I can't go without asking. First off, thank you so much for, you know, taking time with us. But one last question that I will ask, from someone who has watched a team this year have heavy contributions from such young players. I would say if there's one team besides Memphis that has had, you know, the most contributions from rookies, it's obviously been Miami. But as someone who follows another team and is kind of, you know, kept up with Memphis from afar as much as you have, to whatever extent that you may have, what is your thought about Memphis? Obviously, you know, the love for Ja Morant continues to grow, which we love to see. We've been, you know, so asking anyone that you can think of what you think of Ja Morant, because we feel so glad to have him. What are your thoughts about Morant, the Grizzlies, and had they, what has impressed you most about them in the season that they have had?
Oh, I think they've exceeded expectations so widely. I did not think that they were going to be able to put it together. And I think that's a tribute to not just Morant's incredible talent, but also that coaching staff being able to communicate and have everybody understand that you can achieve greatness in one season. And even with those lowered expectations, perhaps they were able to exceed those so completely and have a real successful year, despite the fact that they missed out on the playoffs. I would have been a nice cherry on top, but overall, I think they had a phenomenal year. And I hope Grizzlies fans are appreciative of that and optimistic about what should be a great future, because they do have a lot of great players there. They do have a great fit. my biggest concern for them long term, and I wonder how you feel about this, is that maybe they don't have that clear superstar just yet. As good as Morant is, I think it needs to be somebody who's probably a little bit more established, a veteran type superstar player, because at least I saw that with Miami and the couple of teams that you could consider mediocre over the last few seasons. They had great depth, they had great talent, something I think that Memphis certainly shares, but they needed somebody like Butler to help kind of establish a hierarchy. And I don't know that Memphis has that just yet. I think they kind of, everybody needs to understand their role perfectly in order to thrive cohesively as a unit. And I'm not sure that the Grizzlies have that. Obviously your key scorer playmaker is Morant and everybody else kind of falls in the line there. But I think you kind of need to have other more established veterans to take that next level as far as a team growth is concerned.
Oh, you are absolutely 100% correct. You know, I had told you, like I say, before we started this show, I had mentioned that the Heat's run this year reminds me a lot of what Toronto did. You had the clear superstar, Butler for the Heat's sake, and then obviously Kawhi in Toronto's sake. You have to have two things. You've got to have, in my opinion, to be able to beat the superstar tandems that are elsewhere, but you got to have the superstar, and you've got to have this young supporting cast that develops as the season goes along. The Grizzlies have the latter. They have those young supporting stars, and Ja Morant could develop into that type of player, could develop into that superstar. Maybe he's probably going to be more that the number two guy, though he is clearly the leader and the most important talent of our core. But I agree with you completely. We eventually do need to find that superstar. The issue is that we're not a destination like a Miami mm-hmm. or a Toronto is. We're going mm-hmm. to have to find that through acquiring that talent. And it's not only acquiring the right talent, it's when do we acquire him. I don't think right now is the case. I think hopefully we eventually get more assets and do that. But I do think that you are correct. For the Grizzlies to truly have an opportunity to where they can step up one year like the Raptors did and like the Heat are this year, they're going to have to find that go-to outside perimeter scorer who adds value on defense but really can be a self-creator on offense. They've got to eventually find that. It's just harder to find it in a place like Memphis than it is Miami.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's I'm glad you explained that a little bit more fully, because I that's what my opinion was, but clearly as somebody who follows and covers the team as well as you do, you'd know a lot better about it than I did.
Well, the thing I will say is this, David, number one, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I will ask you to do this. Please let our listeners know where to find you. I know that there are a lot of, you know, Memphis loves basketball. It's woven into the fabric of this city more than it is most places in the nation. So there's a lot of talk about the Heat. I know people like to keep up with the players on the team and are really impressed with how successful they've been. Where can people follow your work? Do you have anything big coming up, obviously, besides the coverage of the NBA? And where all can they find the stuff that you do?
Well, they can always focus on my writing and anything else that I tweet out on my personal account at DVermill13, or they can follow the Locked On Heat account, and that's where I'll be tweeting about the team. I'll be covering all the games and, of course, talking to different folks from the Boston media as we prepare for the Eastern Conference Finals and maybe even a deeper run than we expected. So that should be a fun time for Heat fans and for Grizzlies fans who love basketball.
David, thank you so much. If you'll stick for just a second after the show. Guys, can't thank y'all enough for enjoying this show. We will be back with you on Wednesday, covering, obviously, you know, the continued news, the continued fallout from Ja Morant's Rookie of the Year win, and obviously discussing what's going on in the NBA bubble. For David Vermeil, my name is Sean Coleman. Thank you so much for listening to us. Have a great day. We'll talk to you soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.